So more twists and turns in the RHI scandal this morning. A former DUP MLA has launched an attack on Arlene Foster. In an interview in the newsletter, David McIlveen claims that Arlene is personally responsible for the renewable heating scheme shambles. Meanwhile, DUP ministers say they are working on an emergency legislation to reduce the projected £490 million extra cost to zero. Economy Minister Simon Hamilton says he's seeking Sinn Féin's approval for the plan, but that came out of the blue for Sinn Féin Finance Minister Martina Mullier. We'll hear from him on the programme shortly. He said he was bemused to learn of the DUP's solution. So what is going on and how is the crisis and standoff between Sinn Féin and the DUP going to play out? Joining me this morning, I have Sammy Wilson from the DUP and Mike Nesbitt, of course, leader of the UUP. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Sammy, so Martina says he has no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I think that first of all, in due time, these proposals go to the executive and seeks executive approval. But the responsibility for bringing forward a solution is from the Minister of the lead department. The lead department is the Department of the Economy. Simon Hamilton and officials have been working on a solution which they now feel they have got and which they believe is deliverable, and that then is taken to the executive, and that's the normal process. You know, when I was minister, things would start off in a department, we would think them through, we would hone them down, ask questions about them, and then bring them to the executive eventually. So there's nothing unusual about it.
Because Martine, we're going to
the normal process of government.
We spoke to Martine just before we came on air. We'll play that for you shortly. But Martine seems very confused, concerned, and in terms of the process, as far as he can see, you know, there would be an involvement with him that he doesn't want to be railroaded into approval and having no time to look over the plan. So it does seem quite odd that he, the finance minister, he is a man that holds the purse strings. He is concerned. Why would he say he's concerned if this is not normal protocol?
Well, I mean, we know that Sinn Féin can do a lot of play acting around this whole affair and try to make some political capital out of it. But it wouldn't be. It's not unusual at all. Had there been money involved, additional expenditure involved, then of course it would be the appropriate thing for the minister to go and talk to the finance minister, first of all, and to ask him, look, if this is our plan, is that money available? But this is the reverse. In this case, Simon Hamilton is looking at a solution which will actually save the public purse money, and therefore there was no need initially to involve the finance minister in any discussions. Where the discussions will have to be had are the executive, when the executive will have to approve the plan which Simon Hamilton has devised. But I mean, there's nothing unusual about this. And I heard Martin earlier on saying that he wants to see a business plan for it. A business plan would only be required if there was additional expenditure involved. But there's not going to be.
So, Sammy Wilson, are you saying that the finance minister doesn't know what he's talking about?
Well, I think that has been proven on a number of other occasions, of course. And don't forget, Martin O'Muller is the kind of finance minister who runs off with fanciful ideas. In fact, the first day he was in post, he ran off with fanciful ideas, none of which we have actually seen come to fruition, and none of which were ever brought to the executive. I think in this case, he is simply playing the game which Sinn Féin are playing.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Sammy Wilson, because what he has said to us is that he believes the DUP are playing the public for fools.
Well,
so when we have the two major parties up here, you know, that we're meant to look towards for leadership to run the country, and we have this standoff in the middle of what has been described many times as a crisis.
You know, it's not taking the public for fools to say that we have identified a problem, we have sought a solution to it, and we believe that we have got the solution to it. And you know, there's no secret as to what it involves. It involves looking at the payments which are paid to those people who undertook the scheme before November 2015, making the tariffs which applied after 2015 apply to the scheme of people who took on the scheme before November 2015, and in doing so, ensuring that, first of all, the public purse does not spend money which is unnecessary, while at the same time ensuring that the people who undertook the scheme in good faith get a reasonable rate of return. And that to me, is a solution which will work, one which should be able to have everyone's support, since it ensures that, first of all, the renewable heat scheme continues, the people who are involved in it get a reasonable rate of return, but the public purse is not paying excessive amounts of money.
Well, Sammy, stay there for just a second. I want to play a short snippet of Martina Mueller. Now, we'll play the full interview later on in the programme, but have a listen to what he said to me just before we came on air.
What we needed was, instead of people trying to play the public for fools, because the public have been played for fools right along in this RHI debacle, instead of playing the public for fools...
So are you accusing the DUP of playing the public for fools?
Well, absolutely. Not only in letting this scheme be birthed, not only in not putting the controls in time, not only in not closing it down, but repeatedly. But the person they won't play for a fool is the finance minister.
Sammy?
Well, you know, I find that rather strange. On one hand, he accuses the DUP of playing the public for fools. On the other hand, he says he hasn't a clue what the proposal is. Now, either he knows what the proposal is and thinks that it isn't a workable solution, or else he doesn't know what the...
Well, Martina said the first he heard was yesterday in the Belfast Telegraph.
Well, if that's the case, and that would be normal, because... as far as the scheme is concerned, it is a proposal which has to be brought forward by the Minister for the Department of the Economy. But it's a scheme which is workable. Either if he knows about it, then he can't say he's been kept in the dark. If he's saying that the public are being played for fools, then he's making that comment on the basis of no knowledge at all, if he says that he's in the dark. And I don't think you can have it both ways. The scheme, to me, is fairly simple. But we know what the problem was. The problem was that there was an open-ended commitment to pay a certain amount of money for every tonne of pellets which were burnt. That then led to an abuse of the scheme. That's going to be remedied so that it's...
It's that very remedy, though, that Martin is saying he has not seen a scrap of paper. I want to bring in the UUP leader, Mike Nesbitt, at this point. Mike, good morning to you. We're bemused and confused.
I've got to emphasise this point. If he is saying that he has not seen a scrap of paper, he doesn't understand what the proposal is.
No, he said he's not seen any proposals to not understand it.
Well, then he can't say the public are being paid for fools.
I think Martin might have been using that to describe this process from start to finish. Mike, your thoughts on what you've heard this morning?
I'm afraid there are a couple of flaws in Sammy's logic. He's saying that there was no need to consult the finance minister. But if that's the case, why did Simon Hamilton consult the finance minister before Christmas? Why did Arlene Foster make such a positive play over the fact the two of them were working together?
Well, Sammy, what do you think? What your response to that, Sammy?
Well, I think that, first of all, the finance minister had to be consulted before Christmas because there were public spending implications at that stage, because no method had been devised for working out how we were going to actually ensure that the additional expenditure...
So there was no plan, but there were public spending implications.
Yes, there were public spending implications at that stage because no plan had been devised for ensuring that there wasn't an overspend. Now that there's no overspend will be involved as a result of these proposals which Simon Hamilton...
From this secret plan.
Then there is no need for the finance minister to be involved, at least at this stage, because he isn't being asked to commit any money.
Well, Mike Nesbitt, this is just due process.
But the due process that Arlene Foster, as First Minister, identified was that Simon Hamilton and Martina Mueller were going to work together to bring on a solution. And now Sammy Wilson, a very senior member of the Democratic Unionist Party, says that's not the way to do business. But the other flaw in Sammy's argument is he argues that if you're going to change something in legislation, you take it to the executive. But when he was Finance Minister, he had the opportunity to bring in a legislative consent motion which would have adopted the 2013 Defamation Act, changed our laws on libel. He didn't take that to the executive. He didn't consult anybody. He just decided, no, we don't need to upgrade our laws. So there are these terrible flaws in the logic of what Sammy is
saying. Well, Mike, that's not true. Of course, I didn't take anything to the executive. That's the whole point.
You didn't take it to the executive. You're arguing that the process...
If I'd been wanting
to change
the law, I would have had to take it to the executive. If I'm not going to change the law, then I've nothing to take to the executive. So, you know, I don't see any logic in the case that you're making. The point is this, that the proposal which had to originate from the Department of the Economy and had to be thought through has now been written up will go to the executive in a couple of days and will require executive approval. I assume it will also go to the assembly and will get assembly approval. And since there has been such concern about the amount of money, public money involved here, I would assume that the Ulster Unionist Party, Sinn Féin and everyone else will sign up to a measure which will actually save the public purse all of the money which people have been shouting and jumping up and down about.
Sammy,
if it is a solid proposal, we will, of course, support it.
Well, there is a solid proposal, and I've just explained this.
If I may finish, Sammy, if you don't mind. Don't forget, this is coming from Simon Hamilton. This is the man who said he had saved the United Airlines flight to New York with a proposal which he actually knew, because his civil servants told him, was against state aid rules. So we're not just going to blindly put our hand up for whatever Simon Hamilton produces like a rabbit out of the hat. We will need to scrutinise that. We're going to have to look at that very, very closely to make sure it holds water.
And I hope that you scrutinise it as well as you scrutinise the RHI scheme when it became before the Environment Committee, because, of course, it went to the Environment Committee and was given the approval of
I think it went to the Enterprise Committee,
and was given not just the approval of the DUP, but, of course, of the Ulster Unionists. And I hope you're going to scrutinise it more than you did when Simon Hamilton did, or Johnny Bell did try to get the scheme changed, the RHI scheme changed, and your party actually voted against closing the scheme down at that stage because you wanted to have more people benefit from it.
Mike, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, well, the two points. First of all, our position was we didn't want to vote to close it because there were people who were actively seeking very large capital loans to buy renewable boilers, and the banks were very willing to lend, as we now know, because of the letter Arlene Foster wrote to those banks in January 2013. So I think our position in terms of a phased withdrawal of the scheme was very, very solid. The second point Sammy makes is correct. Mrs. Foster wasn't the only person not to see the fatal flaw in the Northern Ireland scheme. Officials missed it. Special advisers may have missed it, or maybe they turned a blind eye to it. That's an open question. Yes, the scrutiny committee missed it, and when it went through the Assembly missed it. The difference between the 107 who were involved in those processes, along with the officials, and Mrs. Foster, is that she was the minister, and the principle of ministerial responsibility has to apply. Otherwise, we are not a proper democracy.
Sammy, this solution that's been put forward by the... Just a second, Sammy. This solution that's been proposed by the DUP to sort out the RHI scheme, is this going to penalise all the participants?
Well, what it will do is that it will apply the rates which were introduced after November 2015 to all of the participants. That will mean that some will receive less than what they're receiving at present, but will still leave them with a reasonable rate of return on their investment, but not the excessive rate of return which resulted from the mistake which was made in the amount of money paid for the fuel.
Because there were suggestions in the past, Sammy, that with the contracts that some of these people had signed, it was difficult, if not impossible, to go back on them.
Well, and I suppose that's one of the reasons why there has been some delay in bringing forward a proposal, because all of these things had to be tested legally. But the state is entitled to bring forward retrospective legislation if, first of all, it is seen to be in the public interest, and secondly, the measures which are being proposed are proportional. And in this case, quite clearly, it is in the public interest because it saves a lot of money. And secondly, it is proportional because it's not that it actually leaves people out of pocket. They will still be getting a return on their investment, but simply not getting an excessive rate of return. And hopefully, those two things together should ensure that there are no successful legal challenges or indeed any legal challenges to the proposal at all. And that, of course, I'm sure the Assembly will want to debate all of that, and the Minister will be in a position to explain that to both the Executive and...
Well, Sammy, that takes me to my next question. Who was the Finance Minister when this scheme was signed off?
Well, the Finance Minister was Arlene Foster when the scheme was initially signed off. The Finance Minister, when the flaw in the scheme was identified, was Johnny Bell. And the Finance Minister... Enterprise Minister. But the Finance Minister at the time would have been myself.
So you, Sammy.
Sorry?
You were Finance Minister.
I was Finance Minister, yes.
So surely you have some kind of responsibility in terms of being across the detail of this scheme?
Well, again, I mean, the lead department in this was the Department of Enterprise. But as I've said, and as
so you had, you're kind of washing your hands a little bit
I'm not washing hands because, of course, when I was finance minister and at that stage, rather than the scheme being a problem, the only problem with the scheme was nobody was taking it up.
Were the problems there?
There appeared to be no incentive for people to take it up.
The lack of cost controls, Osami, was that an issue then?
No, the lack of cost controls was not an issue because, of course, we were actually underspending on the scheme at that stage. The overspend didn't appear until 2015, but at that stage, the problem with the scheme was that we were actually underspending on it. And it was the problem was, how did we incentivise people to actually take the scheme up? But, you know,
could you not have put digression in at that point, Sammy?
There's no reason to put a direction at that stage on the spending. It was being underspent. That's the first thing. And secondly, the rates had been approved.
It wouldn't have been prudent then to look at cost controls in a scheme that you're overseeing?
The rates have been recommended by the consultants and by the department officials, and indeed the instruction to the minister at that stage was that there was no need to have tiered payments.
If you had put digression in, surely, Sammy, you could have kept the same tariffs, and that would have made the scheme just as attractive, but less, let's say, dangerous.
No, Vinny, the tariffs which applied at that stage were actually lower than the tariffs which applied in the rest of the United Kingdom. And that was the reason why there was no requirement for tiering. In the rest of the United Kingdom, the tariffs were 7.9 pence, whereas in Northern Ireland, the tariffs were 5 pence. So the 5.9 pence. So the argument was, we're actually giving a lower tariff than the rest of the United Kingdom, so therefore we don't need to tier it. So rather than being some signal that there was some problem with costings, the indications were that our problems were that we were giving lower tariffs than the rest of the United Kingdom, and we had a lower uptake than the rest of the United Kingdom.
Okay, well, Mike Nesbitt, you hear Sammy there. It wasn't his fault.
Well, again, I don't think the logic holds up. I remember very well being a commissioner for victims and survivors, and that was an arm's length body of the Office of First Minister and Deputy First Minister, now, of course, the Executive Office. And when something came forward, we were always told, well, it has to not only be approved by OFM, DFM, it has to run past the Department of Finance. It's part of the checks and balances of the executive government. And Sammy can say until he's blue in the face there was no need to put in any cost control at that point. But there was, and the reason is this. £85,000 a day it is now costing us because of the failure to put in a cost control. It would have been entirely prudent to say, yes, the uptake may be very low at the moment, but should it go up, to the rate that it has now reached, we are going to have a very big black hole in our block grant. And here in the GB legislation is something we can cut and paste in terms of a mechanism for cost control. It's called digression. And simply put, what that means is if there is £1 available for subsidies, and one person applies, they get the full pound. But if 100 people apply, they only get a penny each. And you protect the integrity of the pot of money you have available. And that's the fatal flaw in the Northern Ireland renewable heat.
Mike, that's not how the scheme worked. I mean, you're showing a...
That's how it should have worked.
That's not how it worked in GB either. You're showing a fundamental misunderstanding of how the scheme worked. The way the scheme worked was that people were given a guaranteed amount of money for the amount of fuel which they burnt. In the United Kingdom, they were told that up to a certain limit, you can have 7.9, whatever it is, per unit. And after, and then when you reach a certain limit, it gets reduced to 2 pence or £2 per unit. In Northern Ireland, we introduced a uniform rate, which was lower than the rate which there was in the rest of the United Kingdom of 5.9 per unit.
Now, are you saying that was not a mistake, Sammy?
Well, what I'm saying is that during the consultation, because those options were given during the consultation, the report which came from the consultants indicated that we did not, if, because we were giving a lower rate for the standard amount of fuel, we didn't need to tear it.
Okay.
That was the information given by the civil service to the minister. That's actually on the civil service brief to the minister.
Okay.
And of course, having been given that information by the experts, any minister, of course, is going to say, well, that looks fine, and that's what we'll do.
Okay, Sammy, I want to turn to the Belfast Telegraph from today, and Mike, for yourself, you mustn't be that annoyed at the DUP. You're quoted in here saying, I'm not seeking a DUP scalp.
No. What I'm seeking, and I think all 108 of us should be seeking, is a pathway to start the process of restoring confidence, public confidence, in the integrity of the institutions. This is far from the first scandal we've had over the last 10 years with DUP and Sinn Féin at the heart of government. And you've noticed before, when a DUP minister has been in the spotlight, that they've deployed, for example, the petition of concern to ensure that we can't vote on a matter of censure against that minister. So there is, I think, a valid public concern that we prioritise people's careers over the integrity of the institutions. And, you know, the Ulster Unionist Party fought very long and hard in 1998 to get devolution up onto the Hill. And our priority is to say to the public, we understand your disgust at what is going on at the moment, and we are focused on trying to repair the damage. Arlene Foster happens to be our leader because she is First Minister. So she has to lead the charge to restore public confidence in the integrity of the institutions. And I believe the only honourable act that she can take to do that is to resign. And that does not imply that she is entirely guilty for what happened in terms of the renewable heat. This is about the impact that that has had, the legacy it's going to leave in terms of public confidence.
Okay.
Looking at the voting records for the Assembly since 1998, turnout back then, 70%. Today, it's dipping towards 50%. Half of the eligible electorate couldn't be bothered voting, and that tells you a lot about how we are held in the court of public opinion.
Okay, Mike Nesbitt, thank you very much. Sammy, I want to just bring something from the newsletter to you today, a bit of a blistering attack from the former DUP MLA, David McIlveen.
Yes?
Well, what your response to that? He's very unhappy with your leader.
Well, I think that, first of all, David's probably very unhappy because he wasn't re-elected, and I suspect that that has coloured his view and some of the comments which he has made.
Well, are you saying there's no discontent within the party then?
Yes,
that there is no concern in terms of Arlene and what she is doing as First Minister? All these calls for her to step aside and the stance she's taking?
I think, if anything, there has been a rallying around Arlene because of the way in which she has been treated on this whole issue. I mean, first of all, and as Mike Nesbitt has pointed out in this interview, the RHI scheme had many hands on it, not just Arlene's, and nobody spotted the fatal flaw which has cost this money. Secondly, Arlene, once it became known, has taken hold of the problem and has been looking at how we can resolve the problem. That's the mark of a true leader.
So is David, is he a bit of a lone wolf?
And thirdly, she has had to do that against the background of hysterical attacks from her enemies, her political enemies, and from the media. And I think, if anything, she's gone up in people's estimation, because many people, of course, at one time thought of Arlene, she was very good at the job of economy minister, meeting and greeting, making good announcements, everything else. The real test of a leader is how do they operate when under fire, and Arlene has proved herself to operate very coolly and calmly under fire, and that has put her up in the estimation. So I think that David is wrong. I think I probably know the party better than David because I've been in the party for over 40 years. I know people right across Northern Ireland. That's certainly not the message I am getting from people that are discontented.
So as someone that's known the party for so long, Sammy, are you sure that no one else will speak out? When no one else will follow Jonathan Bell and now David McIlveen?
Well, I mean, nobody can ever say with certainty that there will not be people who, for one reason or
another... You've not heard of any, Sammy, is what I'm asking.
No, I haven't. And one can't say that there will not be someone who has got some discontent and who, unfortunately, is disloyal enough to... to use that the opportunities which present themselves to express that discontent. And I think that both in Jonathan Bell's case and David McIlveen's case, Jonathan Bell, of course, was the minister in place when the flaws in this were identified and didn't act for 3 months. I think he was probably covering his own back in attacking Arlene. And I think that in the case of David McIlveen, he had a local axe to grind because he wasn't re-elected and felt that there was, because he put up an extra candidate, he was the one who lost out. And unfortunately is now using this opportunity to get his own back. But okay. I know from my own experience and from my own knowledge of the party that what he is saying is not true. And certainly his assessment of...
Well, David would no doubt deny that he's using this to get back at the party.